General Government Subcommittee, and we'll begin a work session on Senate Bill 5542.
Thank you.
Mr. Wayne.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 5542 is the Department of Revenue's budget. You have before you my memorandum dated May 23rd of 2003 with respect to the budget of the Department of Revenue. Excuse me. You also have as backup support is this spreadsheet that shows all of the numbers that would end up. With your permission, I will go through my recommendations.
Please proceed.
Okay. We're starting with the governor's recommended budget, and my recommendations are adjustments to that budget, and I'll go through them as you have them. They're by section or division. The first is the executive section of the department. Our recommendation is to reduce the general fund appropriation by $48,541 and reduce the other funds expenditure limitation by $6,829. This is to implement the wage freeze, reduce inflation on services and supplies, and the reduction for the Attorney General's billing rate. In the administrative services portion of the budget, our recommendation is to reduce this the general fund appropriation by $240,041 and reduce the other funds expenditure limitation by $35,231. And this is for reduced inflation on services and supplies and the reduction in the Attorney General rate, as well as the entire reduction for the DAS assessments. Those are placed in the administrative section here in the department. We'll prorate those as needed. With respect to the information processing division of the department, our recommendation is to reduce the general fund appropriation by $486,737 and the other funds expenditure limitation by $22,183 for reduced inflation on services and supplies and to implement the wage freeze. We are also recommending the elimination of one vacant position of 0.64 FTE and the transfer. These funds would be transferred from the personal services supplies. This amounts to about $59,000 from personal services to services and supplies to more properly reflect where the funds have been spent. I should point out that the department has been utilizing vacancy savings because of its constant turnover to essentially to fund needed services and supplies. So what we are doing is our recommendations, we're recommending the elimination of actually 10 vacant positions and shifting those funds to where they are actually spent. The department has not, in analysis with budget and management, this has been an ongoing sort of way of balancing their budget. They've been taking, if you will, reductions in their services and supplies that they haven't been able to afford, really. They've been funding it out of vacant positions, so we are recommending the shift in those funds from personal services to services and supplies.
Question on the information processing. Mm-hmm. I know that we've had a substantial uptick in the amount of information that's being sent in that people are delivering electronically to the department. Is there any noticeable cost savings to the state in terms of just an initial data entry? I mean, I don't recall what the figures were. They've got to have thousands of new tax returns that are put in electronically. That information doesn't initially need, I know it needs to be reviewed, but doesn't initially need to be re-entered. Have we had any recurring savings as a result of those?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Elizabeth Marchenko, Director of your Department of Revenue. In response to Representative Patridge's question, we are seeing growth in the numbers of tax returns that are submitted using electronic filing. We're also seeing growth in the overall number of tax returns. We are experiencing some savings in our need for seasonal employees. What we're doing actually is we're able to maintain our level of performance with an increasing workload with a constant or slightly reducing number of positions. But what we've done is we've seen some savings on the seasonal end.
Dallas, I guess my issue here, though, is this is like a third of the department's budget in the Information Processing Commission. And I don't think new filings, and I could be wrong, I don't think new filings have substantially outpaced, number of overall filings have substantially outpaced number of returns that are being processed initially electronically. I could be wrong, but...
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, the Information Processing Division has four parts to it.
Okay.
It does have the processing center.
Right.
It also has our computer services operations, our finance.
I have your flow chart, but
right.
Your processing center is 240 positions. And so my question is.
And there, many of those are fractional positions, not full FTE.
Okay, 181.20 FTE.
So are you interested in having us break out the center and show you where the
I'm just wondering with the substantial uptick in electronic filing, which takes initial data entry time, which would initially take data entry time initially, you're now receiving that information electronically. I know you're reviewing it, but you're not physically spending the time to key all that in. I'm wondering if there's any savings, FTE. I mean, we're trying to scour these budgets,
I understand that, Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge. We, in the initial budget that we submitted, we had turned back seven positions that we felt that we could, as that were vacant, that were productivity savings. The governor and the co-chair's budgets recommend reinvesting those productivity savings in production of additional revenue.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, I was going to get to that in the additional revenue generating.
If the productivity pieces were taken out of this division?
The productivity pieces are coming out of the whole department because that kind of...
But where are they coming out? I mean, you said seven positions, so where are they coming out of? I mean, you have it broken down by divisions, and so.
Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Jim Maneri, the Deputy Department. We have seen some productivity savings because of the switch to electronic. And in the 2001 budget, we gave up about 15 FTE out of the processing, recognizing that.
Okay. What I need to know is that it's been taken. That was my question.
I'll continue with respect to the property tax division. Our recommendation is to reduce the general fund appropriation by $570,534 and other funds expenditure limitation by $173,485. Again, for the wage freeze, reduced inflation on services and supplies, and reduction in the Attorney General billing rate. Here we are also recommending elimination of three vacant positions and transferring again the funding from personal services to services and supplies to reflect where the monies will be spent.
Dallas. Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you.
How many instances are there where that you're taking vacancies or trying to true them up with where the money's being spent? Will you, in your recommendations, have captured all of those, or is this just a little nibble at an endemic problem?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, this addresses a little over $1 million in cost shift. This current biennium, we're looking at about a fund shift of about $1.5 million in savings being used for services and supplies out of personal services. So for the upcoming biennium, we tried to capture most of that. So I wouldn't refer to it as nibbling away, but trying to true it up and then take another look at it again in 2003-2005. So, again, for the 2003 biennium, we're looking at about $1.5 million, and we're taking about $1.1 million this time.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. If, in fact, one of the themes of this session's Ways and Means work is to try to true up these budgets, what was the argument not to completely rectify what is obviously an issue?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I guess the argument would be to provide them with at least a little bit of flexibility and also to see how it plays out this next time, because we haven't taken these positions in the past for these purposes. We're taking 10 this time, and we want to see how that plays out in the 03-05 biennium as to effect on departmental operations.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Winters.
I'd just like to follow up. Then how many positions are still remaining that would that we aren't taking, that perhaps if we were going to really true budgeting, that we would have taken if we didn't allow them the flexibility?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my guess would be about five more. There are, the last count we had was an April 30 count. There was the department had 125 vacant positions. A number of them are positions that haven't been vacant for very long. We are taking 10 of those right now. But to true up the numbers, you know, with the $1.5 million, it would probably be about five more. The department always has some, and because of the freeze on hiring, and then they also had let go a number of people because of Special Session 5, 120-some people. Special Session 6, we restored funding to at least in the property, in personal tax, and like we didn't provide enough funding for the property tax people, but to restore their personal tax and business tax compliance efforts. We restored those in Special Session 6. I understand most of those people are back on board. They had issued the pink slips, and then not long afterward, the legislature gave them authority. So, the direct, I don't know. I'm guessing about five positions.
A follow-up. How many of those five positions have been vacant more than 9 months?
Oh, not, Mr. Chairman, none? Committee, none. They have...
6 months?
Oh, that one I couldn't give you an answer to. There would be a few, but not too many. I apologize. I don't have that information right in front of me. But the review of it was these have not been vacant for very long. It's just the fact that they had been using, you know, this cute, if you will, a month here, a month there, to kind of built into the budget. And so what we were doing is taking away full position.
I guess that's my understanding, that one of the things that we wanted to try to achieve was truism in budgeting. And so as much as possible that we weren't using the vacant positions when we should be using it for S&S or some other purposes. And that's why I'm following up on Representative Johnson, that if we're ever going to get there, then we need to, you know, I think to know truly what is the S&S costs and truly what is the personnel needs. And, you know, I'd like to have, really, if there's five, and you don't have to do it today, but someplace that we know how many positions are there and what that is, so that when we review these budgets again, that becomes a part of that discussion again. I don't think we're ever going to get there unless we do really begin to push for truth in budgeting.
If I may, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, that was one of the reasons for this, taking these. My target really was not a number of positions, but a funding of about two-thirds or more of what this biennium's services and supplies that had been funded out of salary savings or vacancy savings, with an eye towards that. So,
can I have another question, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
What were the increased S&S needs? I mean, if we really step back and say that really the need was over in service and supplies, and we instead used vacant positions, what were those needs?
Boy, I would have if I would ask the department there. I think it's spread across. They were taking a lot of general reductions during the special sessions across the boards. They always took it in services and supplies, so the reduction didn't go away. So they were actually funding what they needed out of the vacancy savings. So quite a bit. It was across the board. I can, with respect to the 0305 budget, there's some serious adjustments in postage and the like because of those rate hikes that we're aware of. Those funds would be used there. But I can't say, I'd have to ask the department to say if there was any particular area over another. I just know that in the reductions during special sessions, it was always against services and supplies, and yet they still needed to spend the money there, so they funded it out of the vacancy savings. No, that doesn't answer your question directly.
No, it doesn't.
Would you please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Jim Maneri with the Deputy of the Department, members of the committee, and Senator Winters. The main areas, the big S&S costs we have are Attorney General, rent, printing, and postage. Those are our significant S&S, and that's fundamentally what we were funding through the vacancy savings.
I think then, just Mr. Chair, then it's very important then that, from a policy standpoint, that you do know whether or not what's happening in Attorney General fees, if it's over, if it's exceeding more than what we had budgeted, rather than doing it with using vacancies. And the same would be true in postage. I think, if you're seeing an increased cost in doing the business that you're supposed to be doing, that's a lot better for us to know that than to use the savings from vacancies in order to know that. So I just would encourage us to know where those are, particularly the EG's increase in fees, because we're very mindful that you're having to pay for something sometimes that you can't control.
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, one of the challenges, and I know you appreciate this, is that as we prepare a budget, we're trying to predict what's going to happen 2.5 years from now. And our legal services fundamentally are because we have to defend lawsuits that are brought by others. Postage increases are not always predictable. And then we also like to be able to take advantage of opportunities to innovate. And you'll see one of our policy option packages is continuing to take advantage of the Treasury Offset Program, which allows us to interact with the U.S. Treasury to get payment of Oregon personal income tax from federal income tax refunds. We were able to take advantage of that program this past processing season by using some of our vacancy to set up for and pay the postage and notification costs we needed to. We could not have predicted that 2.5 years ahead of time. So one of the things that we appreciate about the way that the legislature has given us our budgets in the past is there is enough flexibility built in so that we can be responsive to what happens while we are executing the budget and use the dollars in what we think is the wisest way, even though we couldn't predict it far ahead. So that's been one of the challenges for us in past budgets. We've elected to give up unspecified S&S cuts in order to be able to shift between people and services when the work that we're doing and the opportunities that present themselves allow us to set priorities in that way. So it does make it challenging, I understand, for you to look at a budget and say, well, this is what your spending plan is. But it has in the past allowed us to take advantage of some opportunities to innovate and become more efficient. And as a result, as Jim pointed out, during the 0103 budget process, to turn back over 33 FTE.
Did you have a question?
I have one just from a high-tech novice. Can you talk about your increased postage costs and so forth? Are you required to communicate with taxpayers via surface mail, or do you do that electronically and satisfy whatever requirements?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, our statutes require us to give notice by mail, by surface mail, for deficiency notices or notices of assessment for people with additional tax.
I understand that part. Those folks may not be connected, but general proposition. But to the extent that your electronic filers are comfortable doing that, are you able to notify them or communicate with them in any way you need to via the Internet? Email, or do you still have to surface mail?
Well, Mr. Chair, our statutes also have very stringent requirements for non-disclosure of confidential information, which, of course, includes Social Security number, taxpayer name and address, and as well as any information that's related to their income tax return. And we don't feel that we have a way to assure secure communication out to somebody if they don't have adequate security on their end, encryption or something, then we're going to be sending something that perhaps could be hacked into and someone else could get access to. So we're very, very cautious and conservative on how we communicate with people. We don't have that ability now. It's going to take some additional work to have the ability to communicate with taxpayers fully electronically, especially when it comes to statutory notice of outstanding liability.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. In the personal tax and compliance division, our recommendation is to reduce general fund by $1,195,881 and the other funds expenditure limitation by $52,059, principally for the wage freeze, also for reduced inflation on services and supplies, and reduction in the attorney general rate. This division also, we are recommending elimination again of four vacant positions and the transfer of those funds from personal services and to services and supplies, again, to reflect where the funds will be spent. In the business division, our recommendation is to reduce the general fund of appropriation by $105,599 and the other funds limitation by $109,635, again, for the wage freeze, reduced inflation on services and supplies, and the Attorney General's billing rate. Here we are also recommending elimination of two vacant positions and transfer the funding from personal services to services and supplies, again, to reflect where the money will be spent. The Elderly Rental Assistance Program, we are recommending a $270,000 reduction to the general fund appropriation. This is just to eliminate the inflation factor. This will leave the general fund appropriation at $9 million. There are some additional adjustments to the department's budget, and I'd like to go through those because these have been discussed with the co-chairs. Some are in the governor's budget. The first one is not in the governor's budget. And this is a fund shift of tobacco compliance efforts from general fund to other funds. This will be accommodated. Senate Bill or House Bill 2368 is in Senate revenue. And what this will do is the tobacco compliance task force efforts will be funded out of tobacco, other funds out of tobacco collections. They have use of this task force has increased collections in tobacco taxes by about $8 million is projected to increase to about an additional $8.8 million in the 2003-05 biennium. And this funds the compliance task force out of other funds. We recommend that the general fund for the department be reduced by $1,436,634 and other fund limitation be increased by $3,038,191. Of this amount, the $3 million in other funds, $1.4 million will replace the general fund that we are freeing up. $693,951 will be sent to the Department of Justice to supplant general fund that is in its budget. We have been in contact with our analysts there, so this will free up general fund in that budget. And $907,606 will be sent to state police for its part of working the task force. I have a question.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Dallas, I need, I guess, some evidence, reassurance from you that the money that is going to the state police has adequate sideboards on it, that it won't get lost.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson. It will go to the state police via a memorandum of agreement between the Department of Revenue and state police, so that it will fund only tobacco compliance task force people. Also, I should point out that this will cause a reduction in general fund receipts that go to the Oregon Health Plan because of the portion of tobacco collections, but that the co-chairs have agreed to hold the health plan harmless. So I just want to point that out. There are additional revenue-generating enhancements that have been were in the governor's budget and the co-chairs have agreed upon. This will provide about a net of $15.1 million to the general fund. It will cost, here's where the plus comes to the GF, and additional FTE to the department. We're recommending the general fund be increased by $5,097,253. And increase other funds expenditure limitation by $62,100. And we will add 44 additional positions, or 39.69 FTE. The additional staff are expected to increase general fund receipts for the 2003-05 biennium by $20.2 million and other fund receipts by $232,000, or a net new general fund of $15.1 million. This, again, has been included in both the co-chairs and the governor's budget. How the monies would be split are spelled out below, but just to summarize, seven positions will be used. These were some efficiency savings, and rather than give them up, they took them away before. We're going to add those back and the general fund, and they're going to be used in personal tax and compliance to generate additional revenue. The plan is to open a full-service office in Gresham that will become operational in 2004. Staff needs to be hired and trained before the office is to open. This will be pretty much experienced people, and it will provide tax services in East Multnomah, Hood River, Wasco, Sherman counties. They expect to generate about $11.5 million in general fund receipts. And then the last one is to establish a filing enforcement collections unit. Right now, they're identifying more non-filers, don't have the resources to go out and chase them. And this would provide additional resources to chase non-filers. And they expect to generate about $5.2 million in additional general fund and $232,000 in other funds. So these are the revenue enhancements that were in both budgets. The next recommendation is to acknowledge that the subcommittee has reviewed and is in general agreement with the department's performance measures. In the budget report, I think we need to have some narrative that it notes that the department is expected to transfer $20 million from the senior property tax deferral revolving account to the general fund by June 30th of 2005. This transfer was included in the governor's budget and the co-chair's budget. This will just about take the senior property tax deferral revolving account down to where it won't be able to offer up much in general fund in the near future. They've done some projections and feel that $20 million can be transferred by the end of the biennium. Also, because of discussions during the public hearings and the revenue enhancement packages, something that the department will be expected to submit a report to the emergency board during the fourth quarter of calendar 2004 on revenue collections from the revenue enhancement resources provided. We don't feel we need a budget note to that effect. We put it in the budget and the discussion that the department will be expected to submit a report, and that we will monitor them and expect we would like them to submit a report. You know, they do have very specific plans and collection targets for staff in these different offices and things that we think they should come back and report on that. So with that, Mr. Chair, my recommendation then on the amendment to the bill is right there. It's just to change the amounts of the general fund. It would be a net increase in the general fund of on line 6 for operations from $122 million, $122,811,312 to $123,824,598. A reduction in the general fund appropriation for the elderly rental assistance from $9,270,000 to $9 million. And then an increase in the other funds limitation from $21,687,886 to $24,388,755.
Alice, a question with respect to the narrative of the budget report sub 2, the report to the E-Board. I recall the reason for that. And going back to your additional revenue generating enhancements discussion, spending an additional $5 million, approximately 40 FTEs to go out and collect $20 million additional dollars. That's the expectation we have, and that'll be the subject of the report to the E-Board. Would this committee review whether or not if you added 80 positions, would you go out and collect $40 million? Or is there some point at which, because I've heard this discussion for a number of years, that the more agents we have, the more money we collect. At what point do you max out?
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have discussed this with the department.
You have, okay.
And it's going down now. In the past, I think the return was $7 for every one spent. This time, you're going to targeting collections of about $4 for one spent. I really think that it's not just a matter of throwing bodies at it, but how you are going to, where you're going to put the resources and what sort of revenues you're going to generate from it. So that's a long-winded answer for I don't know.
But it wasn't long-winded either.
But I do believe that as potential collection as they are better identified from the department communicates within itself. A good example is this one where through certain practices now they're identifying more non-filers. Well, they said, well, if we apply, given the number of non-filers and the patterns we see, we'll add a few resources to that and we'll collect additional resources. The opening of the office in Gresham, it takes some thought as to what sort of services and what sort of additional compliance will be achieved out there. So it's not one of those things, well, if I give you more money, it has to be somewhat thought out. And I think that we're seeing, I don't think another 40 people will guarantee another $20 million. But that doesn't say that at some point in the future they may not be able to identify wherever they can put additional resources to generate some additional revenues.
Discussion. Representative
Patrick. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to go back through the Orbitz report DAS a little bit. Can you tell me what flexible benefits are, line item 3270?
I haven't seen medical. 3270.
Back in the very back of this Oregon Department of Revenue DAS budget report.
Okay. You have a page?
I'm back on page 10 of 17.
It shows up in a lot of pages, though.
Yeah.
But the overall one.
Yeah. Okay.
From $11 million to $15,382. I hadn't seen that kind of jump in flexible benefits on the other departments. So I'm wondering what that is.
Mr. Chairman of the committee, and I'm going to ask the department to correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe most of that is for medical. And it would reflect a couple of things here, not only the increased cost of medical insurance, but I think the roll-up of filling all of the positions that we've added. So that should be...
is every agency...
They should be
I just don't recall flexible. The other agencies that we've looked at having huge jumps in flexible benefits like that, but that's okay. I'm going to go back and look at a different notebook while I'm here.
Flexible benefits are principally the medical insurance.
Okay.
Senator Devlin, did you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to point out, not that I want to encourage the use of fuzzy math, but after the March forecast and when the co-chairs came out with their balanced budget and the governor came out with the revised budget, I think, at least in the case of the co-chairs, probably in the case of the governor, they recognized this additional revenue that would be generated that was beyond the forecast based on additional positions being added to revenue. So now when we do budgets after this, of course, we've got the May forecast, and that doesn't obviously recognize that there will be this additional revenue based on those new positions. So perhaps we need to insert those fuzzy dollars back into this budget in terms of anticipated additional revenue generated.
I believe you.
Mr. Chair.
Being that it would be almost just a rounding error for the forecaster in terms of...
I think that once the action is taken by the committee, then the Office of Economic Analysis will take it into their forecast. And it would include two things in that additional revenue and also the $20 million transfer from the senior... It may not be in the Office of Economic Analysis forecast, but it's in the co-chairs and the governor's budget.
Okay. Senator Winters,
did you... No, I didn't. No more fuzzy math.
Representative Johnson, you have...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I still am perplexed about the vacancies and truing those up. And I guess what I would like to hear with the chair's permission is from the agency how severe it would be to lose the flexibility on those five positions. I mean, I think that paying for positions out of other categories of funds is just endemic. And I with your permission, I'd like to hear that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, this last biennium has been crazy, as you all have experienced and we have experienced in the department. And our vacancy factor for the last 2 year, for the 2 year cycle that we're in, has ballooned and dropped and ballooned and dropped because of the freeze and then the layoff process and then bringing people back. And so we have a really abnormal biennium. When we look back to 9901 and before, I think what Dallas did was go back and look at, for a pattern. And we are commencing a process now of going through and updating our business planning and looking at what resources we think we're going to need going forward. And I had suggested to Dallas that one of the things that we might do is come back and share that business plan once we've completed that and give you a sense of where we think we need to be with respect to positions. It's very, very hard right now to talk about where we would take, if we take additional positions out, depending upon what they are, we could experience some revenue loss unless you do the shifting again. But the flexibility that we've had that we've really appreciated is to be able to be responsive to whatever's happening during budget execution. During this last biennium, as we saw the forecast going down and the economy going down, we loaded up into our personal tax and compliance division and maintained as close to full position funding as we could in that division, which was different from what we had done before. So it gives us the flexibility to be responsive more in the moment, since we find it very difficult to predict so far ahead.
Representative Johnson.
A couple of follow-ups. The first one is that, I guess this is more of a comment. I'm only in my second session, but I can't tell you how many times I've sat in these committees and heard agencies come in talking about their planning. We're redoing our business plan. We're reorganizing. I don't think I've heard any of the major agencies who aren't doing that. DAS was doing it. And I guess what I'm looking for is at some point, when does a business plan become the business plan with a shelf life of longer than a biennium? And the organizational structure that lasts longer than a biennium. And I understand how difficult this last interim has been with the six special sessions and all the rest of that, but it's just at some point, there's got to be an organizational structure, and this is not necessarily pointed at you, that lasts for longer than one budget cycle. But the second thing is, how many positions are actually gone? People that left the Department of Revenue as a result of any of the actions of special session, any of the special sessions.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I'll answer the second question first. We were very fortunate. When we had to issue the layoff notices, we delivered 126 layoff notices. After all of the filtering out process, because some people did move into vacant positions and didn't have to leave the building, we had about 40 people who left the building. Out of that group, we had one retirement, which was not reversed. We had one person who found another job and did not come back, and a third person who chose not to come back for personal reasons. But everybody else we were able to bring back because the turnaround was fairly quick. On your first question on the business planning, as we have talked with other agencies about business planning processes and looked at how to do that and studied best practices in the private sector. Business plans, we understand, are living documents that we have long-term, more or less fixed mission. Obviously, the reason why we exist doesn't change. The values that we operate under and where we're trying to go in the very highest level sense, that has not changed. It's the strategic and the tactical pieces that continue to be updated with what are the improvements in technology we can take advantage of, what are the needs of the work that we do, where do we need to place emphasis. Dallas mentioned non-filers, that's a growing area of problem that we have to focus some more energy on. Where are we able to reduce our costs? Representative Patridge identified the fact that we are being able to use more and more technology for the the routine processing of information, and as we make the investment and get that set up, then that allows us to not use people. So the processes that we go through, the work that we're doing is changing and evolving. Our organizational structure, we do not anticipate big changes in. But where we strategically place our efforts, what kind of skill sets we need, how we use technology, that's something that continues to evolve, and we're on a 12 to 18 month lookout within on about a 4-year plan.
One final follow-up, Mr. Chair. If I understood you correctly, Ms. Harshenko, you had 126 layoff notices. 40 people actually left the building. So out of the 126 layoff notices, is it right to say that 86 of those folks went into unfilled positions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, that's correct, because we were under the freeze since last June.
I'm still just trying to get a sense of how many unfilled positions are still floating around through all the agencies. And I understand the need for flexibility, but I also understand that the temptation for abuse in the use of those vacancies. And I think all of us have heard the message from the co-chairs in looking at budgets to be hunting for how those vacancies are appropriately used, but also lessening the possibility that they could be used in ways that don't fly with the concept of truth in budgeting. You're looking at me like I've...
No. I'm just wondering who you want to answer that.
You.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I really don't know, and outside of the agencies I work with, this is the first agency. Well, it was in another subcommittee with. I had another agency where there were many, many vacant positions that had been vacant for 2 years or more, We haven't seen that. We don't see that with the Department of Revenue. So
this is a completely different. This is the first time I really went through this type of an exercise where I identify those kind of floating vacancies and ask them to eliminate them. I think that the what we're trying to do is, well, what I've tried to do in the recommendations, take a first shot at it and then see what the impact is on the department. And that's not to say that there may not be more in the future that are more easily identifiable because of some changes in operations. And with other agencies, I just don't know.
Let me try to be a little more pointed then in what I'm asking. Out of those 86 folks who went from getting layoff notices to into other positions, how many of those positions required then desk audits and rewrites of the positions? And maybe they didn't technically have desk audits, but I can't imagine that those 86 positions were absolute fits.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, when those people were, when the positions were eliminated, they went through the bargaining layoff process. So if you're like a revenue agent 3, so you're a senior revenue agent, you can move in, if there are available, under the contract, you could move into another revenue agent 3 position, maybe somewhere else in the agency, if you had the seniority to do it. If you did not, then you might have to bump down the revenue agent 1 position and take a lower level position. So we didn't reclassify the position.
That was my question.
When they moved. No, they had to take the position that was vacant and do those duties.
Senator
White. Mr. Chair, I have a question. And I think one of the points that Mr. Tinkle made was that the need to have some flexibility in order to have dollars to meet in the opportunities when they appear. Do you keep a ending balance? Do you have a reserve, number one? And the question would, can not that reserve be used to take advantage of those opportunities rather than vacant positions? I'm just trying to get us to where we can get a little closer to truth in budgeting. And so I asked that question. And probably you, Dallas, would be able to answer it.
With respect to the reserve, this agency is funded principally with general fund, so it doesn't have any funds.
So there's not. It's the only agency that doesn't set aside some operating dollars?
Well, I think it has an allotment process, and general fund, it's controlled very tightly. There's some other funds, but it's not any significant amount. So, I think they operate, this agency, I don't like to go to bat for an agency, but I think that they operate on a fairly, they know the width of the shoestring, and it's not that wide. One of a better way to explain it, because it is so much general fund.
So this is the only So this is the only avenue that they have when there's an opportunity for them that they can access dollars without.
Okay. Representative Patrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'm still trying to get this flexible benefit. I just walked through the Orbis report. I went back and pulled our DAS numbers for DAS. DAS's flexible benefits for the legislatively adopted budget for, well, maybe I did it. Hold on a second. Okay, keep going. I made an error.
No, but the flexible benefits are, I think it's entirely the medical. So it's entirely the medical.
I guess I'm going back to kind of the global discussion that Representative Johnson engaged in. I think the troubling or confusing aspect, at least to this naive person, is when you issue layoff notices to 120 people, suspect that you figured that 120 people would be laid off. When the public and the rest of us find out it's only 40, and 80 made some kind of lateral move within the department, it's, to me, it seems to defeat the purpose. And I suppose that the reason for layoff notices was to achieve a savings or reduction in expenditures, and you computed the 120 number to realize that savings. And if, again, the shuttling people around, I'm not sure we're getting the, at least what was expected. Or, and if we did, it's harder to track that way. And I think that's what we're talking about in our... Nobody's accusing anybody of anything, but I think at least for us to get a full understanding of what your service and supply account needs to be, we need to state that. For a long time, I've wanted us to actually, as you know, state what is the true auditing charge for an individual agency when the Secretary of State or somebody else decides to do that, rather than having a all assessed and kind of larded throughout the system, and nobody really knows how much an individual audit costs. And I just think we kind of lose sight of things that way. Senator Jekyll?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I didn't. I have just one question in terms of when those layoff notices went out, and I'd assume that was part of the special session process. Was it a reduction in expenditures or an actual reduction in FTE that was?
May I? Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, members of the committee, as you recall, when the economy started to go down, the first thing that happened was the governor issued a hiring freeze notice in June of 2002. And then by the September special session, we had been given a part of the across-the-board reductions that came out of that special session of $4 million of general fund. We were and we had started planning on reducing our spending with about November in order to lessen the impact on our general fund revenue production. Then we were told that the special election was not going to be until January instead of November, and that we were to hold on our plans until after the January election, which left February, March, April, May, and June in order to accomplish savings that were still at that $4 million level. When the measure failed, we made one last request to see whether there was a way that we could generate additional revenue to pay for our $4 million or whether we needed to implement the reductions. We were told we needed to implement the reductions, and we were told that we could not change our plans. So the plans we made in September and refined in November and then last refined in January, knowing that we had to reduce our spending and knowing that there would be about a month of going through the process, that we had to save $4 million or cut our spending by $4 million of general funds in about 4 months. And that's where the 126 position count came from, was that we had to reduce spending by that much in a relatively short period of time. We were carrying vacant. We had vacancies. We had given up a number of vacancies as a part of our budget reduction plans earlier, but we still had some that we were carrying. And in order to avoid the unpredictable unemployment costs and some of the other costs that we were thinking that we were going to have to incur, plus the contract rights that our employees had to move into positions that were vacant and were funded, we retained our funding and put all of it into our revenue-generating positions, auditors, AS1s, and revenue agents. And most of our staff, a lot of our staff, fall into those classifications. So the plans we had done were for what we expected to be a permanent reduction in our workforce. And so we made policy decisions about where we could appropriately take those and preserve our core operations, which is bringing in the money that comes in from people who are trying to do it right the first time and doing some auditing and collecting of accounts that we know about. So we made reductions in our filing enforcement area. We made a reduction in the cigarette area because the state police had said they were bailing on that, and without them, the task force wasn't going to be effective. Some reductions in filing enforcement efforts in other areas in order to preserve the core. So the folks who got the layoff notices ended up being people who were in those classifications that we have a lot of. And we had vacancies, and we moved them into auditing and collecting current accounts and off of filing enforcement. So that's where that shift happened, so that we could minimize the loss to the general fund. As you know, that the reduction in force we estimated was going to create a significant loss to the general fund for the remainder of this biennium and a very large loss to the general fund for this coming biennium. And that was information that was taken into consideration in restoring our funding for those positions. So the story is complex. How it all happened because of the decision points and what things started in June and then September and then didn't happen in November and did happen in January, and that the amount of time available to try to change plans was election was January 28th and our notices went out January 30. And then about a month went by, and then with the forecast at the end of February, then the decision was made to restore us, and we were able to bring people back. It was pretty amazing for us in the agency. Folks worked right up to the time they left their desks and said, "Leave my computer running." And they came back and hit it. And so we will meet the obligations that we made to the 2001 legislature and to the intervening special sessions for revenue production. And our estimates are we'll meet it by the end of this week and have a little extra that will come in during June. So we're doing our best to try to generate revenue in a tough time for you, and we're using our people to do that.
Senator Devlin?
Chairman, just a couple of follow-ups. Just to see how volatile the situation might be. in talking to the director of PERS last Friday, he said that PERS retirees for the first 6 months may exceed their expectation of 8,000. They actually reach 10,000. Be about the average for 3 years normally. I would assume with 900 employees in your agency, you've had a goodly number of retirements. How many retirements do you know that you've had in that six-month period?
Well, I know that in the last 2 months I've signed over 30 retirement letters.
And another follow-up. In terms of, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if any of this will ever come to fruition. But there's all this discussion of revenue in this building. And any of the discussion of revenue is probably going to lead to some modifications in the requirements on the Department of Revenue, I would anticipate, particularly if we get into any of this discussion of adjustments and deductions or exclusions. So I'd actually wish that had been this stringent with the Department of Administrative Services. I probably think it'd be prudent to leave the Department of Revenue with some flexibility.
You can always bring it back.
I'd like to.
Further discussion? Bring it
back. Oh, sorry.
All right. We're in a work session?
We are in a work session, Mr. Chair.
Can you
get
a motion?
I move staff recommendation on Senate Bill 5542, Department of Revenue, as outlined by legislative.
Senator Winters moves that we adopt the staff recommendations on Senate Bill 5542, dealing with the Department of Revenue. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the recommendations are agreed to.
I move the bill as amended, Senate Bill 5542 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Winters moves Senate Bill 5542 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Anything further to come before the...
You need the sign carriers.
That's a Senate bill. Senator Winters? Vote on the House side if it passes. Representative Passage?
Sure, that's fine.
Okay. Anything further to come before the General Government Subcommittee? If not...
pleasure of being a part of this fundraiser. See you again soon.